Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Saturday morning, May the 16th, 2015, and I'm very grateful to be with you in this format of Satsang. We're going to be looking at relationships. Ooh, I have gathered together some really interesting questions that have been sent to me, probably more than any other question that I get is about relationships. And I have this kind of feeling that over the many years I've been a teacher, this word relationship has really been taken for granted and a lot of other things. We typically don't understand what relationship is or what it's really all about. So I don't intend to change you or try to get you to see the nature of what I'm talking about, but I think you'll see the futility here as we go along, and you'll kind of get the understanding of what this word relationship is all about. So I'm very grateful that I have this opportunity and this blessing, so may this serve you well. I want to thank my sponsors who make this possible. It is only through your tax-deductible gifts that I am able to offer to you these programs, and if you are enjoying them, it is my hope that you will become a sponsor and help us sustain this. Our mystery donor has matched funds and is helping us with all of this, and I am very grateful for his loving kindness and support. Let us go on with the questions. First one comes from Kathy. Don't know where she lives. How can I make my relationship with my husband more spiritual? He is depressed all the time, and I'm going down the tubes with him. Maybe something spiritual would lighten the load. Kathy, spirituality, real authentic spirituality, the kind of spirituality where we are entering into the practice of love, is a very difficult thing. A lot of people can't do it because they have various forms of depression. Depression takes on forms of negativity, maybe in a person's personality. It is a DNA genetic factor that people have. My father used to say to me when I was dating and younger, he said, check her teeth, make sure she has good teeth, and remember this, in the end, that girl that you think you love is going to turn out just like her mother, so be aware. And to the most part, my old father was right. He was very right. So, Kathy, you got to ask yourself, what was it about you that made this man possible in your life? What were you really doing when you met him? Were you enthralled with the idea of marriage, a happy ever after mentality? Was the sex good? Did it cultivate within you a sense of gratification? Did you not look to his family and what he was all about and how he was raised? Probably not. Most of us don't. We're in the heat of the moment. Our chemicals are working. The testosterone is pumping in males, estrogen in females. And before you know it, it's just a chemical reaction. And that's all we're doing is chemistry. So I understand all of that. Hopefully you do too. Maybe you do. I don't know. But what your husband is suffering from in the form of his depression, his onset of depression, I might say, he's had it all along since you've been married, since you even met, is something that you cannot avoid. And no matter what you may think or how you may think of it, it isn't going to go away because you want it to. He would have to take some real important steps. He'd have to go somewhere to do something with his. I would say he should be clinically looked at and maybe deal with it from the clinical point of view, trying to find out what it is that makes him so depressed. And if you understand that, if you can get that, then you can help him. I would get him to someone, a professional, but I'm going to guarantee you he isn't going to go into the spiritual. He just won't do it. You have to understand, he won't do it. To get into the spiritual, to really reckon with himself spiritually, would probably be way too much effort. He'd have to be interested in the cure, and most of us are not interested in the cure. We are only interested in being cured, and the two are very different. When I only want to be cured, it means that I only want the answer, and I only want to be told what to do. Tell me to do this. Tell me not to do that. Tell me what to eat. Tell me what not to eat. That kind of thing, a mechanicalism that most of us get off on. And those are the only things we can do. You two would have to explore and go deeper and deeper and deeper into your heart. You'd have to want to know your heart. You'd have to want it more than anything in your life. It isn't about keeping a marriage together, keeping a relationship together. It is more than that. But who can do this? Who cares to do this? You say, how can I make my relationship with my husband more spiritual? Well, there are a lot of things you could do, but how far would you go? You see, the depression that he is feeling is the result of emotional indulgence through genetics and through his own DNA. He isn't going to pull up and say, you know something, Kathy, I've been going down the emotional river too long. I've been doing my genetics. I feel my father, my mother in me, whoever was genetically sticking out here through depression. And I need to do something about it. I don't want to go on medication. I want to rather meditate. I don't want to do mediation with myself. I want to meditate. I don't think so, Kathy. I doubt it very highly. I've had, in my 40-some years of session work, very few. In fact, let me think. I've had no men ever come to me and say this: I am depressed, I'm making my wife and my family miserable, and I feel the deep pull to go into something really powerful, something really beautiful. I know there's something beautiful in me. I've never had a man do that. Not ever, not never. And he'd have to say, and no matter what it takes, no matter what I have to go through, I want to be absolved of my DNA, my genetics. I want to be able to live on my own without all of that. People don't do that. Just people don't do that in general. So, Kathy, if he's depressed, you need to get him to someone who may have chemical help, where they can give him chemicals, medication to help him. And that may be as far as he'll ever go. That's what I see in most people. That's as far as they'll ever go. If it can't be done for them, it won't be done through them. So they want someone or something, a pill or something to take that will make it all better for them, so they don't have to go through anything profound. I'm sorry. I know you probably wrote me thinking, well, if you do this and you do that and you don't do this and you act perky here and you make dinner there and you act sexy here and you two go off and have sexual adventure out in the ethers somewhere in the weekend and come back, you'll be a different man. No, that's not going to change anything. And that's the pedestrian mentality working at its best, thinking that there's a cure outside. The illnesses that all of us have are from within, not outer. It is my within that is sick. And until I am sick of my own sickness, until I am absolutely sick of it, where I can't do it one more moment with myself, not one more moment with myself, will I ever do anything profound. And the endurance level of people I have found who live in the state of mediocrity is absolutely incredible. They can be mediocre for a really long time, many, many hundreds of lifetimes. So, Kathy, maybe the effort is not going to be to change him. Maybe, Kathy, maybe the effort might be just to change you. Maybe if you sought the way within your own heart, your authentic heart, not your emotional heart, your authentic heart, something might change. Something of the other shore might enter into you. It's just a suggestion and merely a thought. I wish you well. If I were you, I would get him to a psychologist and see if he could get some help. Please forgive me. Namaste. I think we use marriage and relationships to try to cure the human ills of our mind and how we live in our minds through emotionality. You're not going to change people. You look at the world. You look at the populace of the world. People don't want to change. They don't want to migrate into their heart and their soul. They really don't. They just simply want quick, fast answers that are going to sustain their immediate needs, and that will be it. Nothing more, nothing less. Just give it to me now. Give it to me quick. However you are, whatever you are right now, whatever I am, whatever has constituted the human side, we didn't get here quickly. We were born into it. That would be very true. But it takes a long time for us because we're reluctant, we're lethargic, and we have a great deal of skepticism about moving within and learning how to achieve a sense of love. We just don't care. And that's just the way we are. We just don't care. Next question comes from Teresa, and I don't know where she comes from either. I've been married for 6 years and have 2 kids. We listen to your programs from time to time, and we find them inspirational, but at other times very confusing. We are not happy. There is something missing in our relationship. What is it? Could you please help, Teresa? Well, Teresa, I don't know you. I mean, I have not sat down with you and your husband. You got 2 kids. There's something missing with you and your husband, and I would venture to say it is love. Now, I'm sure you would stand up and if we were sitting together in a session and say, that's not true. I love this man. I love my kid. It's the quality of your love. It sucketh. It isn't good. It isn't real love. Anything that is alive needs love. Anything that is alive is about love. And relationships and everything on this earth is alive. So everything is about love. Everything. The grass is alive, if you have any. I don't suppose you can have any now due to our aliveness, but that's another story. The trouble is there's no love in your life. And love is not as something you can pretend. Love is not as something you make. Love is not something that you can go get. It is the recognition of what you and I truly are. You are that love beyond the idea of being a Teresa. Whatever you are, it is beyond the idea of Teresa. You have to drop the Teresa part of you and go into love. Now, I don't know how old you are, and I don't know your circumstances, so I'm kind of throwing darts here in the dark, but I know people in general. And most of us live in the common denominator of mediocrity, especially when it comes to emotionalism. So I'm pretty sure I can be right about this. If you want real love in your life, you're going to have to cultivate it from within yourselves first. You can't share it between 2 people when it's not there. Find out what you share with each other. I think you'll find it's about emotionality. I think you'll find out that it's strictly about all the emotions you have within you that you use to appease yourself. And why do you use emotionality to appease? That would be a very big question you could ask. You could look inside yourself, maybe through meditation, maybe by conscious living, maybe by living more consciously or even in consciousness, and begin to find out what the heck is going on within you. Most of us don't even know. We have no idea what's going on within us, nor do we care much either. We just assume that what we are feeling emotionally is what we are. If you can get a little distance, if you can create third person, if you can just sit back, go back and back, practice detachment from your emotionality, practice detachment from what you want, practice detachment from your identity and who you think you are. Just sit. Teresa, just sit and be quiet. I am not Teresa. Keep working on that. I am not a Teresa. What is a Teresa? You could sit down and journal that. What constitutes being a Teresa? What does she like? What does she not like? What does she need? What doesn't she need? What threatens her? What causes her fear? What causes her hate? Just look at it. Don't get moral about it. Don't get self-righteous about it. Just look. Self-observation. Just keep watching and watching and watching. When you're no longer trying to use another person in order to sustain what you believe is a relationship, which is nothing more than self-righteousness gone amok, then you will understand the changes that need to be made within you. Once those changes start to enact themselves in and through your life, there might be something different born in your relationship with your husband and your children. I don't know. It could happen. I've seen it happen here and there. But it's very frightening to people because you will find that your husband and kids depend upon you to be a certain way, in a certain way, as a certain kind of person. And while that person may not be the happiest person on earth or the kind of person that feels good about themselves, at least that's the person they know. And that's the person they want to know and that they believe they can be. So what to do? Now you have to decide between maturing into love and taking the risk that maybe the people around you aren't going to love you anymore because you're going to come out the other side a very different person. It won't be, in this case, your love for them. It will be their affections, their ideals, their emotionalism towards you that will be in question. And you're going to have to ask yourself, is this what it's all about for me? Is this the thing I am really wanting to wind up being, whatever suits their needs, emotionally speaking? And what if that isn't a very high degree of love, which it typically isn't? People will say, oh, you've changed. You're meditating, you're working on yourself, and now you're changing. Now you're going beyond my petty little emotions that I don't want to look at, that I don't want to acknowledge that I feel. You've changed. You're not the same person. You're not as nice a person. You're not as good a person. You're not cultivating my weaknesses with me. You're not helping me be the negative person I enjoy being. People won't like you for that. I did a series many years ago called Nobody Likes You Anyway. It's on the website here at inspire.org. And I really think, Teresa, you ought to take a look at it, especially the one where you don't have to be perfect to be loved. And should you be able to hear that message and resound to it and understand that your life is at stake and that if you love your children, that you will do everything you can to let love live through you, to let love live you, then you have something quite beautiful and quite unique. Teresa, what I have to say to you is not easy. I wish you well. And if I can help you, you know I'm here. Please forgive me. Namaste. You know, the most frightening thing in my years of session work, and even in my own life with my own relationship with women, it's a very, very interesting thing. You meet in one emotional state, then you get married in another emotional state, and then to keep the marriage and to keep all of your responsibilities and obsessions together, and our responsibilities often turn into obsession, our responsibility to the kids and our mates and everything, we become another person. And we're none of the things we used to be. We certainly aren't the person that we were when we met, what, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. We learn how to survive relationships, not thrive in them. And that's the sad part. That's really the owie of it all. The last question comes from Frank. What is marriage? He asks, what happens to us in it, Frank? Marriage is medicine for people. That's what they think it is. It's so they don't have to be alone. So men with their men disease, man disease, we don't like being alone. We like routine and we like everything the same. It's partly that, okay? And then for women is the security factor. It's a business deal. You give her security so she doesn't have to worry about going out into the world. No woman wants to work. It's not in their DNA. No woman wants to be out there in the cutthroat world of business and all of that. They don't want to do it. It's in their genetics, their DNA. You are stick gatherers and children raisers, and the men go out in their DNA with their testosterone and go kill animals and then bring them back with our knuckle-dragging mentality. That's what it's all about. It's just pure survival. And then people want to glitter it up with all sorts of things. They want to glitter it up with I love yous and Valentine's and things like that, emotionality, thinking that in that they can overcome the reality of the relationship or the situation, which is really ugly, really ugly. Marriage is an excuse for me not to grow, not to personally work upon myself. That's really all it is. Marriage is an excuse. We don't have relationships with people. A real relationship has to have a common denominator. And you have to ask yourself, you want to get to the core of it, Frank, what is the common denominator between me and my beloved? What is it? What are we both in this for as a common denominator as individuals? Well, people say, I want a woman or a man who's, we work as a team and we get what we want and we survive and we make this big family. We have all this money. And then if the money is there and the family's there, we've done so well and everybody, da-da. People aren't going to be doing well in the new world that's coming up here, overpopulated and filled with all sorts of pollutants. We still thrive off violence and fear and hate. And if you really look at what's between the two of you, you'll see it's trying to avoid fear and hate and catastrophe through fear and hate, which creates catastrophe, which is our mischief. People don't want to see that. I mean, you really don't want to see that. You come to somebody who is there to help you and you say to them, you bring your wife and you bring your husband or whatever, and you look at them and say, well, you know, this is really hopeless because in order to stay together, the common denominator is the fear of what you'd be without each other. That isn't a good thing, and that isn't going to help anything, but that's the way people think, and that's the way people are. Marriage is an excuse not to work upon yourself. And marriages where they come to work upon themselves through the practice, while they have a very beautiful opportunity to unfold with each other in a kind of a glorious way. Most people use it as, well, maybe this will fix my wife or fix my husband. And it isn't about a fix. It's about unfoldment. It's about beauty. It's about changing the conversation from what should we do to who are we? And that's not something that people are going to do. They're just not. So, Frank, marriage is provincial. It is for the pedestrian mentality. Relationships can be more than just what marriages have become. It can all be about love. In fact, it is all about love, whether we think it is or not, but we just don't choose to see it for what it is. I could say so much more, but I don't have time. Anyway, thank you. Thank you, Frank. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, or something I might be of service to you, and please come to this website. At the top of the page, you will see contact. Just click on it. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. I'll be back on the air tomorrow morning. Please forgive me. Namaste.